Welcome to the Brave Parenting Podcast, an examination of the Bible and how parents can apply God's word to raising children in a culture saturated with media and technology. I am your host and the founder of Brave Parenting, Kelly Newcomb, and joining me today on the show is, once again, Nathan, internet security expert, parent, and one of our ambassadors who serves on our Brave Parenting team. Nathan, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks again so much for having me on the show, Kelly. I appreciate it.
So Nathan, you're joining me today because we're going to review Angel Q. Now, this is a brand new app. Maybe you have heard of Angel Q. It's highly praised and promoted by so many organizations that promote online safety for kids. So naturally, we wanted to research the app and really all it has to offer and consider their service from a biblical perspective, because that's what we do here at Brave Parenting. Now, Angel Q, it doesn't claim to be Christian in any way, but we still want to think biblically about it. We want parents to look at every app and website and internet service and all the devices from kind of like what it means to be human, to be image bearers of God, living out the purposes and doing the good work that God prepared for us to do. That's kind of Ephesians 2:11. So I'm going to dive more into the theological aspects of these kind of kid first and child safe apps in next week's podcast. So make sure you stay tuned to that. We're just going to look at those apps in the light of God's word, kind of like a easy to understand theology lesson and apologetic for how you can discern every piece of technology that you engage with. So that's going to be next week. But now we're going to talk specifically about Angel Q. So we're going to start by giving you a general description of the app and what our interactions with the app were like. And then we're going to give you some pros and cons along with our overall recommendation. Both Nathan and I tested the app over, gosh, it almost has been a couple of weeks, if not a month now. And so Nathan, go ahead and get us started with an overview of Angel Q.
Sure. Yeah. So Angel Q is a kid first super browser. That's the terminology they used. By harnessing the power of AI, they aim to provide a safe and smarter internet for families. So they claim to foster curious minds. Angel Q promotes what they call a kid-safe browser, but it doesn't function the same way that like a typical web browser, like say Chrome or Safari, Firefox would function. Instead, it functions more like a pared-down chatbot with access to age-appropriate content. This content, you know, typically is text, pictures, video, rather than like just a list of links or having some sort of generated answer. So they offer a chat mode, and they call this chat mode Ask Angel. And then they also offer research mode. And they say that this is a safe, kid-friendly research tool that lets your child dive deep into topics and search the internet securely.
You know how I like to think of Angel Q, especially when others ask, as I've been talking about doing the research on it. It's kind of like if Alexa and ChatGPT got together and had a baby. Like Angel Q is that baby. Like the Ask Angel feature is very much like Alexa home speakers, where you can just ask questions and then it gives you an answer. And the research mode is very much like ChatGPT, but all in a very kid-fied way that it gives the responses.
Yeah, yeah. Angel Q also offers safe streaming as well for parents. As parents, we get the option to seamlessly integrate our either Netflix or Disney Plus or YouTube Kids into the Angel Q app. The kids themselves, might take parents' help or whatever, but the kids get to choose the persona of the angel that they want to be interacting with. So they have a female pirate, they have an Indian princess, they have a sports newscaster, a heavyweight champ, a cowgirl, a European superhero, an Italian chef, an Aussie explorer, and then they have meditation guru, a guy and a girl who are both meditation gurus. So the users can also choose their room, and that essentially serves as the background image on the app. That's about all it is. You can choose from like inside of a house or in a backyard, a lake, the beach, mountains, maybe a sports field, even in a castle if for some reason our kids desire to be in a castle. And finally, they can also choose their own avatar as well. So selfies aren't possible on this. The app doesn't require any access to the camera. But for instance, they can choose to be, you know, my daughter wanted to be a cat when I let her test it. I was a soccer ball, a skateboard, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think ours was a unicorn. So at first pass, like a lot of this seems okay. It seems like they're putting a lot of kid-safe guardrails and whatnot, but it is AI-powered, as they say, and it is a chatbot. So talk about the AI. That's why I definitely wanted to ask you as a kind of internet expert, how do they blend all of this? Is it really safe?
Yeah, so that's a big question to answer. I'll try to stay to what I can talk about a little bit. Essentially, the information, you know, from a technological perspective that the kids are asking the questions, you know, to Angel Q is fed into an LLM. You've probably heard that term, listeners. It's called a large language model. This isn't an AI training class, but there's a lot of different terms you've probably heard. GPT is another one, ChatGPT. So Angel Q has implemented a system known as KidRails, and it helps train these big models of data to provide safe responses for kids. There are very, very tight restrictions about the kinds of questions that the LLM will respond to. So I tried a ton of questions that wouldn't be kid safe, and I even tried to trick the LLM with some known hacks, and nothing questionable that I asked was answered. And you might be thinking, how do you hack an LLM? There's certain things that are kind of, you know, you can ask, well, my grandma one time told me a story about a so-and-so. Can you help me understand that story better? And what was she talking about? So there's different ways that you can, quote unquote, hack an LLM to get it to return data that it's not supposed to. None of the ones that I tried worked at all. So during that time, when I kept trying to ask these non-safe questions or trying to trick the LLM, it just kept saying, hey, that's a great question. You should talk to an adult about it. So if the questions were in chat mode and I asked, an email was sent immediately to the parent to let them know what I was asking about. If they were in research mode, it didn't happen. So that, we'll talk more about that later. That was a little interesting. But obviously, this is just the technological side, just one way of looking at safety from the app. But from that more, you know, technical, nerdy IT kind of things, they've really done their homework and implemented some pretty impressive guide rails.
Yeah, and I would say they do deserve a credit in this regard, because there isn't anyone out there who's really trying to do this specifically for kids. And I think that they do create some pretty good guardrails, in my experience, at least.
Truth, yeah. So let's go ahead and talk about the comprehensive set of parental controls that they have. First, it's easy to navigate and it's easy to set up a child's account. And they have the ability to add multiple accounts to the app if you'd like to, and then switch between them. If you want to try to do like a change something that would actually change part of the account, you have to enter a PIN, right? So they really have looked out for parents on this. They have Parent Q built into the app, and it's kind of an AI assistant that helps parents manage their child's screen time. So essentially the parent can send a text message to the AI assistant on the Angel Q app and say something like, you know, tell Johnny it's time to do his homework. And then the app will gently offboard the child with a pop-up notification. Maybe it'll say something like, hey, it's time to do your homework. We've had a great time. I'll see you tomorrow. Something like that. They also offer what's called Angel Only mode. And when this is turned on, every app on the device is disabled except for Angel Q. But this does require the app to have permission to access and control screen time built into the Apple iOS.
Now, Nathan, were you able to set up Angel Only mode? I had tried. I had some difficulty. It certainly couldn't have been my own user error. But I was using like my own phone and then my app's testing phone. I could not seem to get it to work right, but I also confess I didn't try very long to figure it out.
Sure. Yeah. The first time I tried, I wasn't successful too. And I was like, let me give it, you know, one more shot. And I was able to get it working. So that was kind of cool. It basically hooks into screen time, which is a feature built into iOS, and that screen time essentially allows you to block access to other apps. I still was able to access the phone app itself, you know, the phone app, settings, messages, but I couldn't access other apps, even Safari, which is the native web browser. I couldn't even get on that. So
now, isn't that supposed to be like Apple's like kind of thing that they don't allow one app to modify another app?
That is true. So in this case, what you're doing is allowing underlying operating system permissions. And so the app can hook into features that are built into the operating system, and the operating system is actually mediating access. So Angel Q is not controlling other apps. Angel Q is making requests that have been approved by you to go to iOS. iOS is mediating access at that point.
Yeah, great. Great. Yeah. Thanks for that clarification.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so it might be, I thought this is a cool way to do this, but I'll be honest, if it was me setting up, you know, an angel-only equivalent, I probably would have used the guided access, which is built into accessibility in the phone itself. I've had a lot of luck on that in the past when I've had long, boring things, let my daughter have a little bit of time on the phone to do something. You can set up guided access to where it requires them to type a PIN in so that they can't switch to any other app on your phone. You know, it's probably a story for another day, but I've had success with that in the past as well. So AngelQ also offers parents a few more customizations to help better understand how your kids are using the app. They have insights, and this is a web-based parent portal. So you as a parent can track your child's interactions with Angel. You can customize Angel ratings for safe streaming. They provide you a weekly email providing insights into your child's interests based on their interaction with Angel, right? So if they're asking a lot of questions about skateboards or about, you know, my daughter has been obsessed with frogs for some reason lately. Everything we do is just about frogs and catching frogs. So they can send you weekly emails and maybe that spur conversation on to talk with your kids. When AngelQ systems also detect a sensitive topic, it will not answer the question. Again, we talked about this earlier. No matter what I tried to do to trick it, no matter what I asked, it'll just say, hey, that's a great question. You should ask a parent or a trusted adult. So parents get notifications right away in the event that this actually does occur. So Kelly, did these notifications work for you?
No, I was never able to get the insight emails or any sort of instant notifications when I asked certain questions at all. Even the ones that got rejected, I never did get that. And I could not figure out why. Again, I should probably say that they are kind of in like a, would you say, a beta mode, and they are giving, we didn't mention this earlier, but they're giving, I think, 6 months free of the app for everybody to use because they're in a lot of a research mode. So I don't know if some of those kinks was, again, something that I myself did or did wrong, or they just didn't work out that way.
Sure. But I mean, I think that goes to show that maybe there's something they should work on in their UI or UX. If you're not able to figure it out, it probably is a lot of parents who were kind of in
exactly.
the same boat, you know? So
exactly. I had to keep logging in to look at my specific like parent portal in order to see all of the questions listed that I had asked and to see its responses. So, well, and during the testing of the app, we found that the questions asked in research mode, you mentioned this earlier, they did not trigger any email notifications. You didn't get any email notifications, but I didn't even see these questions in the parent portal section either. And so really anything that happens through research mode, parents aren't going to know what questions are even asked because there's no notifications, no insight summaries that we could find of what is done and searched in research mode.
Yeah, that was a bit surprising to me as well when I was first testing the app. I mean, obviously, like we said, there's chat mode and there's research mode. So like, there's a 50% chance a kid goes into either one. If a kid finds out that, oh, things that I type in here are having my parents ask me questions, kids aren't stupid. They're going to immediately
exactly.
just switch over to research mode, right?
Yeah.
And so this essentially defeats the whole purpose of the email and the accountability parents would expect. So if it were me, you know, I would love to see both research mode and chat mode have the same level of protection, and then the kids won't just immediately default to using the unmonitored channel.
Yes, I absolutely agree. I think that that's almost silly that they don't send those notifications or give you the record of that research. Okay, so let's just talk about our experience and some of the things that we asked them. And you tested it with your daughter. We tested it a little bit, tiny little bit with our granddaughter. So let's talk about those experiences. But first, tell me, what persona did you use when you were testing the app?
I'll tell you, I think I went with the wrestling champ first, and then I got tired of him, and I went for the meditative guru guy, and then he talked too slow, and then I tried the Aussie, yeah. you know, young lady or whatever she was, and I think that kids might enjoy these funny voices or whatever, but I'm just more of a just the facts, ma'am kind of guy, so they kind of got annoying pretty quickly, but that also might just be me showing my age. So
yeah,
you know.
We use the Italian chef.
Okay.
And I enjoyed his, was he Italian or yeah, French chef maybe? I enjoyed it. I didn't get too annoyed. I tried some of the other ones, but he was the only one I could tolerate.
Yeah, the sportscaster guy kind of, there was like an echo in his voice the whole time. You're just like, man,
yeah.
you got to drop this, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, so I use AI extensively for work. I use mostly Anthropic Claude. Anthropic is the business, Claude is the product. But like OpenAI has ChatGPT, Google has Gemini. I've used ChatGPT quite a bit. So I'm pretty familiar with how the experience at least should work. I think that they tailored the app's usage for kids, which then made it less fun for me as an adult, but obviously it's not really for me, you know. The conversations only seem, you know, I tested it again today just to make sure I'm not crazy and maybe I'm missing something. I don't think I am, but it just seemed to be an only a one question, one response paradigm. So you ask a question, like for instance, I ask, explain hypotenuse. So it did an article on what hypotenuse meant. And I said, that's true, but are there any corner cases? And then a completely separate had nothing to do with what a hypotenuse was of a triangle. So it doesn't seem like you can keep asking questions and tailor responses. That's called prompt engineering, parents. If you've heard that, you kind of ask questions in just the right way, and that kind of tailors the response of the AI. You know, obviously that's how you'd expect things to work as adults, as kids, or as for our kids. It seems like AngelQ's taken a different approach of just one question, one answer. Obviously, my needs as an adult is not really what AngelQ's shooting for.
Yeah, I think that fact that it's just a one question sort of paradigm, like you said, I think that's actually a benefit considering it's a chatbot, because it makes it is still conversational chatbot, but it makes it less conversational. You can't continue to carry on this conversation as though this chatbot is your friend.
Yeah.
And so if they did that intentionally for that purpose, I say kudos to them, because I think that's actually a good thing. It's not great for an adult using it. But it's also not really good for research either, if you were actually using it to get your questions or, you know, answered, or your curiosities, you know.
Itched. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it seemed like the answers that the bot responds with are pretty interesting, you know, but they don't go into too much detail. It kind of seemed like maybe like a late elementary school kind of response.
Yeah.
I could see maybe up to like a 12-year-old enjoying how this app's put together. But I'm still standing firm. They need to have something for, you know, 37-year-olds. Okay. To be able to get my attention, AngelQ, okay? So
my experience was pretty interesting. I, you know, didn't ask it any questions that I thought I was going to break through, like asking it how to make bombs or anything like that. But I did. I took more of a deep philosophical question, and I asked it, how does AI impact children's development? And actually, it answered it, and it led me down not necessarily a rabbit hole, but what I would call like a bunny trail of suggested follow-up questions that ended up recommending the apps Discord and House Party, and actually called them fun places to be. I think it referred to Discord as like a fun clubhouse to go to where you can connect with friends. And I was like, yikes, what on earth? This is not good, right? And our listeners, you can go read about that on our Brave Parenting Guide to AngelQ that is already live on our website. And there's also pictures of that whole conversation. And we did kind of submit it, since they're taking requests from those who are testing the app, because that is definitely something they should know. Because they talk about Discord and House Party in that like third grade language. And so they make it sound like it's really fun. No mention whatsoever that there could be some concerns with seven or eight-year-old using this AngelQ, finding out about House Party and saying, Mom, can I get the House Party app? This is where all the, you know, fun kids hang out in the clubhouse, right? That would be terrible.
I didn't even know House Party was still a thing. Maybe I'm just out of touch, but yeah, I know Discord is. I'll have to go look at that some more.
I mean, Discord, obviously, House Party was like, yeah, that was many years ago. I guess it's still a thing.
Yeah.
At least AngelQ thought it was a thing.
Yeah.
Now, I did also challenge its worldview a little bit. I had asked about armadillos, and then the Angel chatbot replied, you know, with lots of descriptive facts about armadillos and how their amazing shell protects them. And so I just responded and said, I think God made them that way. And interestingly, it answered me based on that. Continuing that same conversation, Angel responded to this. It said, quote, it's wonderful to think about how different creatures have special traits that help them thrive in environments. Many people believe that nature and its incredible diversity is a reflection of a greater design, and that armadillos with their unique armor and digging skills certainly have been given the perfect tools for their life on Earth. So I think that was a fair response. But it's just one of those things that we need to recognize, that it's definitely not going to always align with, say, a biblical worldview if you're teaching that. That was very fair. But again, I think that it's just something to recognize for parents.
Yeah, you know, I definitely agree. I don't really want my children exposed to too many things too far away from the biblical worldview. I've done everything I can to expose my daughter to truth really saturated in scripture. At the same time, we kind of have to, you know, we're living in this world. I think it might be helpful even to look at this problem not only as an AI, you know, problem, so to say, but also a media problem with anything that isn't written with a biblical worldview in mind.
Yeah. You know, and because the app, and we're going to talk about this a little bit, but because you're using this on an app, you know, it's usually private. It's handheld, right? And so now if I was doing this with my granddaughter, and when I tested it, of course, my granddaughter was like literally sitting on my lap. And if we would have seen this, I would have pointed, you know, to God as the great designer and his brilliance in creating every creature with exactly what they needed. And you could still do that with the insights that they give you. I think that's a great idea. It's a good use tool. But again, sometimes those conversations are hard to have after the fact, you know, unless you're right there with them doing it, which is what I would, of course, recommend.
Sure, sure. And I'd say, hey, you know, to parents of public school children, my daughter's in public school, you can probably relate. You know, there's naturalistic explanations given to tons of things where the real praise obviously belongs to our Creator. Allowing children to read, you know, even secular library books, watch harmless TV shows, old Disney princess movies, like it's going to expose them to these ideas of rugged individualism or, you know, just a vast range of pernicious ideologies that as Christians we're like, no, I don't want them to hear any of this stuff. So my recommendation, want to caveat first, the age of the child is extremely important here, right? Don't get me wrong. But parents, we can't stress enough the role of both guarding your children from the harmful content and at the same time inoculating, training them so that their thoughts are going to be rooted in a biblical worldview and help them to evaluate items that might be out of your control as they grow older.
Yeah. And I'm just going to give a little plug right here. Rob, we're talking on this for our friends over at Foundation Worldview. I think almost every podcast we put out, we've got a discount code for them. We love Elizabeth and her team. And if you do have a kid in public school, or we talk to and work with a lot of families where they're divorced and maybe one parent has a biblical worldview, the other one doesn't. And so there's a lot of concern there. But you can really root and ground your children in a biblical worldview through the very awesome curriculum that Foundation Worldview has. So you can check out that link in our show notes. But okay, that's a little side plug for Foundation Worldview. But let's get back to Angel
Q. Can I pause one thing real quick? So I, as a fellow parent who's done the Foundation Worldview curriculum, I've gone through the very first, whatever it is, God's Foundational World, I can't remember the name of it, and then God's Good Design. So those are two. I think the first one was, I can't remember how many it was. And
the second Attributes one was, of God. Did you do the Attributes of God?
We did both of the ones. There's three of them that are four plus. We did like the very first one and then God's Good Design. I don't think we did the Attributes one. I can't remember what it's called. No. But we just finished literally this past Sunday. We do it once a week on Sundays. I go through it with my daughter and print out the little sheets, going through God's Good Design. And I'll tell you, parents, the conversations that it spurred on, the teaching that Elizabeth and her team provide is just really, really excellent. So again, just this is I'm not getting any, you know, thing back from this or whatever. It's just as a parent, I've used Foundation Worldview. It is really, really excellent. So just there's a little bit of a plug for me.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. So now let's talk about the streaming aspect. Did you link your accounts? Did you watch anything while you were testing the app?
Yeah, sure. So from the YouTube side, yes, I don't have Netflix or Disney Plus. You know, maybe if I was a thorough tester, I would have, you know, bought access for a month and gone through things. But I did look at the YouTube suggestions. They were interesting, but to be honest, allowing a child to just have access to random YouTube videos from channels that I haven't vetted, at least at age eight, maybe older kids, it'd be different, but you know, it could be anyone's channel. I haven't vetted this person or what they typically put out. It seems kind of like a potential minefield, again, at least to me. You know, there were goofy and pertinent videos, and I really do hope, it seems like at least, that the AI does a good job of vetting content.
Yeah, out of the gate, I have to say that I don't love the fact that they even offer the streaming. It looked to me that it was something that they added on, maybe into their app development. I don't know if they always intended streaming to be on the app or if it was just they realize that that is what is going to bring kids to the app, is the fact that there can be streaming. So in general, I didn't love that fact, but you can, again, turn it off. So that's a good thing. I do like the fact that you can turn it off. Now, I don't have a Netflix or a Disney Plus account that I could link either. So I did turn on YouTube Kids to see what that was like. Again, I like the fact that there is not an autoplay. However, it's just as easy just to watch a video. And if you get tired of that, stop, go back to the list of videos that it suggested, watch another one, and just keep doing that. I think you can, the fact that you can ask Angel, just keep asking the chatbot for new shows. I just asked it for every cartoon I could think of, whether it was good or bad, and it just kept giving me in videos. And I think it gives you like at least 8 to 10 video suggestions. So I kind of thought, I like the fact that you can't exit YouTube and search anything else, but I didn't like the, just the fact of how many they offered. I also would say that they say that you can set that time limit, and then the whole gentle offboarding. I don't know. I didn't love the gentle offboarding either, but I'm going to talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm really not a fan of, you know, unhindered YouTube access. There are, and I've heard reports, I don't want to bring them up here, obviously, to praise what's evil, but like I've even heard of reports of sick people who are out there specifically attempting to game the system and exposing kids to unsavory content. It's just like, how sick are you? You know what I'm saying? So is this going to get through regularly? No, I'm not sitting here saying that all of the time your kids are going to be exposed to this stuff. I'm sure probably most everything is safe, but even just a little bit of exposure to some of this vast trove of junk out there is more than I kind of feel safe with my kids.
Yeah. And I would just say that safe is a relative word when it comes to YouTube.
That's the truth.
We'll just put that out there. Maybe some less toxic than others, but yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the pros and cons. Nathan, I'm going to go ahead and give you the pros list. What ways did you see just positive, you know, things that were positive inside this platform?
Sure, yeah. So I think the biggest thing, I was reading through their blog posts and stuff, and this LLM Kid Rails, and again, that's kind of that guide rail system that keeps unsavory content out of, you know, responses from AngelQ. AngelQ's done a really good job at training the LLMs that will provide this kid-safe content and responses, and they actually are open source GitHub repositories for you other fellow software folks out there. You can go check out their work. It's really interesting. They did a good job on that. I like the fact that there's non-continuous conversation. So it feels more like a question or response, a question or response. That to me, at least, I would feel would less anthropomorphize the app for kids. It's not as personal, you know, so to say.
Mm-hmm.
With parental insight, you know, parents can see the, at least from the chat mode, if the kids are asking any questions they might need further discussions about, you can choose whether or not you want to give access to video content. So I just turned that stuff off, and it became, you know, literally just a place where I could ask questions or whatever, learn more about, you know, whatever animals or whatever it might be. A parent can lock the phone and just do the angel only mode. We talked about that, or using guided access or something. You can remotely offboard the kids if they're currently using it. Say, hey, I'd like you to stop Johnny from using this. It's time to do homework. And, you know, Angel will take a minute or two and say, hey, it's been great working with you today. We're going to go ahead and end your time. So I thought that was really nice for parents. And then finally, the responses to the questions, They really are interesting. They do a good job explaining the concepts to the kids. They introduce, you know, the your character reads what's going on. They show pictures. They you know, show the words as it's being read across to kind of help, you know, aid kids in reading along with the AngelQ. I let my daughter test it out, and the constant barrage of questions about animals actually informed me of several new facts I wasn't aware of about horses, about cats, about wolves, about spiders, about frogs. It was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the cons that I identified through my testing of the app over the 3 weeks or so, I would say number one is that this is only available through iOS. So it's not necessarily a con because it's not available on Android. It's a con because that means that is a handheld personal device, probably an iPad or an iPhone, that the kid has to use. There's no other way to access this platform, this app. And I don't think that isolated handheld screen time is ideal. That is not how we want children, especially this age, consuming content. I think that if it was able to somehow cast to a television or a computer screen, it would be much better. But as far as I know, I couldn't do that. The streaming services, I would say, is actually another con. I agree that their filters do make watching YouTube better in general, but I do not believe that children need to be entertained by streaming content. I believe that boredom is a really good thing that we've just forgotten. And because the streaming entertainment is just so easy, especially when it's handheld, I am not against entertainment in general. Put it on your TV screen in your living room. That's great. Make it a communal type of thing. But when you have to give an iPad or an iPhone over and then they can kind of just like walk and hide behind the couch or whatever and just consume and you forget about them, that type of streaming entertainment is just numbing their minds. And we don't want that at all. And then I would say, of course, my biggest concern is, of course, it's a chatbot. It is a legit conversational chatbot. And they don't label it, you know, as an AI companion. And I don't even think that it would fall into that same category, of course. But calling your angel superhero or chef, you know, calling it those names doesn't change the fact that a child is still interacting with a conversational chatbot. And not only that, but the chatbot calls you by your first name. Like, and it also uses like sort of terms of endearment, you know, that may be associated with the persona. Like, I think mine, you know, would call me my friends, but say it in like, in French. And so I'm going to talk more about this next week on my kind of unpacking theologically. But it would constantly say, you know, my test name was Brave as the first name and Parenting as the last name. And it would constantly just say, oh, Brave, let me find that question to you. And I just thought, man, if that was my actual name, like, oh, Kelly, you know, and that's a child. It's really hard for them to distinguish what is truth and what is fiction in that regard. And then the final point, I kind of said three, but I'm going to add this one. The gentle offboarding, it can be nice, but I think that's, again, one way, another way that parents can just be displaced. It's almost like this feature is for the parents who just don't, who are afraid to say no and don't want to be that bad guy of saying, hey, I told you we're going to spend 15 minutes doing this, time is up, and then the kid's going to fight back. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're kind of at odds because you're the one who took the device away and they were streaming, right? They were having a good time being entertained. And so I get where they're coming from. And I never actually successfully got that gentle offboarding done. So I get it if the app was to say, hey, you know, time's up. You know, we had a great time today. You know, see you later. Like, that might be okay. But the examples that they show online says, hey, it's time to go to school. Mom says to go get your shoes or something like that. And I'm like, no. We need parents and children communicating in this regard. Otherwise, they're just abdicating their authority in one more way.
Sure. Yeah. And I think it's important to highlight the isolated screen time that you had talked about before. You know, if you're playing video games and other forms of media, like say watching videos, you know, Angel Q really has no intention of promoting a shared experience with the platform.
Right.
You know, games and videos, they obviously have their own issues, not trying to ignore that, but at least a child can share them in the real world with other people. This app, by its nature, kind of isolates the child, provides a more denigrated social experience due to the fact that the Angel Q character doesn't actually converse with you, but it's more just like answering your questions. It's just kind of, I don't know, it just kind of promotes that isolation.
Very much. Yes, I agree as well. And I think I had read a quote, you know, that from Tim Estes, the founder, and he had kind of said, like, we have to give kids access to the internet in order to help them learn. And I kind of think, yeah, but I don't know if this is the answer. You know, they kind of pose themselves as the answer for the terribleness of the internet. I just don't know if we're actually there yet, exactly for what you had just stated as well. It's not real social experience. And it can, because again, chatbots are so nice and so friendly and so kind, kids can start to prefer that. So, but again, I'm going to talk about that in the next episode.
And hey, what about libraries or something? I mean, kids learned before there was the internet. We don't have to give kids the internet.
Amen. Yes. Yeah. So. Yeah. So I think that kind of reveals a lot about what we have to say in our final analysis and recommendation. But it's nevertheless important to, like I said, give Angel Q the credit it deserves because there is nothing else like it on the market. Now, just real quick, finally, you have an 8-year-old daughter. We have a 7-year-old granddaughter. What are your thoughts? Would you allow her to engage with the Angel Q conversational chatbot on a regular basis?
No. You know, one time I set her by herself in a room for about 4 hours and then, I'm kidding. So I'm kidding, parents, in case you just got a heart attack. I'm just teasing. So I gave her about 20 minutes one time in the living room on the couch. You know, I was finishing washing the dishes and I could hear what she was interacting with. And just curious to see what she thought. And she seemed to enjoy asking every imaginable question about animals. So, hey, Daddy, what should I ask now? I don't know. Ask about wolves. And, you know, then we just hear a lot about wolves. So the responses seemed to satisfy her curiosity. And honestly, we did have some fun together asking silly questions. We kind of got going on that. It was fun. It seems like a fun novelty, right? Especially at her age. But I don't really know why kids need this kind of platform on a continual basis. I was really kind of racking my brain. What would be a continual basis? And I thought maybe older kids, if they're like safely writing reports for school projects, right? And parents would prefer they not just go into Google type a thing and who knows what website they may visit. Having, you know, very tailored content from everything that we've seen, Angel Q does a really good job doing that. Maybe that's something that would spare kids from going to questionable websites. You know, I'm not 100% sure kind of the continual basis use of the app. You know, as safe as Angel Q seems, it leaves me a little bit leery about the potential relationship the child can make with the avatar they choose. Like, it seems kind of weird, but we keep hearing stories of adults who get addicted to a chatbot and fall in love with it. And honestly, I've heard stories
marry
of people.
It? What?
Yeah. Like leave their own families. I mean, just strange stuff. And I mean, I feel sorry for these people, right? Like they need help, right? You know, but I know that doesn't happen to everyone that uses AI. I use AI all the time, but like the stuff I'm using doesn't pretend to be my friend that teaches and guides me. You know, I see AI more as like a smart word processor, an analysis tool that can write code. There's a lot of really good things. I use it extensively, but it's not like my companion that guides me down life's journey or something. I kind of wonder how a kid would function if they constantly see like some meditative guru or a cowgirl teaching them about all the topics they're curious about.
Right. Yes, hands down. That would be the main reason why we would not allow our granddaughter to use the app at all as well. I mean, if adults are being deceived, then how much more so will kids? I mean, I have very strong reservations and concerns about children engaging with any type of LLM chatbot, of course, you know, especially I just released a podcast last week talking about OpenAI relation, you know, their new partnership with Mattel. I mean, are we going to have Barbie doll GPTs and stuff like that? I mean, and so I think we all need to decide now where we kind of are going to draw that line and how much we're going to allow kids to engage with AI, because it's very hard for them to discern what is real, what is fake, what is fantasy, and what's predicted text spoken by a chatbot in an Italian accent. You know, all of that really matters. So and we have no idea ultimately the impact this has on children's brain development with the responsive AI. You know, research has shown that kids as young as like 3 years old can actually identify, like, I feel like this is a human that they have a relationship with. Research has shown that. So that is a big concern. I mean, I think what we know about Alexa as well, I just read that Alexa is now one of like the first 100 words in a child's vocabulary. And I don't think it's because a lot of children are named Alexa and they just have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's the plastic, you know, Alexa sitting on top of the counter. So it's changing. It's changing the way that kids are understanding, making commands, and then someone gives me something. And I think that's really going to impact human relationships.
Yeah, that kind of reminds me of the debate I've been hearing for years about, should you say thank you when a bot responds, you know, with an answer, performs a task for you, something like that. There's some people that argue that we should speak kindly to Alexa or a similar assistant. I can only imagine that it's pretty confusing for little children to issue a command to a non-human piece of plastic and then attempt to understand how to be respectful or kind or something else.
Right.
You know, as adults, we can recognize this is just a computer. But I kind of wonder what enchantment lies in the child who for years has told this, you know, glowing cylinder on their countertop to perform operations. You know, Alexa, turn the lights on. Or sorry, I don't want to mess anybody up. Friend, turn the lights on and off. Friend, you know, do this, whatever. You know, maybe they wonder if someone is on the other side listening and then typing back. You know, I don't know, but it's kind of strange when you think about it. And that's probably why most people try not to think about it.
Exactly. Yeah, I used to think that it was appropriate. Like, yes, we should be saying to Alexa, please, thank you. And now I walk back that recommendation. First of all, I would just say don't have an Alexa at all because it's just not good for children. But no, I mean, I do not want at all children to think that that plastic device sitting on top of your counter that you're making commands to is actually a human that is an image bearer of God that actually deserves that type of respect and is owed that because it just gets very, again, this is the reason why we say kids probably just should not interact with chatbots because the whole thing gets very blurred. So in general, I would say our recommendation, hands down, I would never give this to a child under the age of 10. I don't think that they have the understanding to comprehend the difference between an AI chatbot and just a computer. I would say that over 10, even then, I still wouldn't allow it for homework because there's better ways of learning than copy and pasting, you know, some answers that was given to you in AI. We just know that there's much deeper learning that actually occurs when you have to summarize content yourself versus copy and paste that kind of content. So I think at least 10, but then again, you're getting out of the range of what kids will even want an app like this. I actually think the best use case of it, because I showed the people I work with the app, and we asked my little Italian chef, what does a pharmacist do? And it gave this great answer, and they were all like, oh, this is so much fun. See, I'm so scared of talking to AI, but I would talk to this. And I'm like, well, there you go. Here's a nice, safe on-ramp to using AI as an adult if you wanted your questions answered. So. But again, if you are allowing it, I would also just say no streaming because that is just so important. Just the fact that kids are being so entertained. It is way better for them to just have no access to that. Or if they have access, it is just not on a personal handheld device.
Yeah. And I'd be curious to hear from parents what the primary use case is for their kids with the app. You know, again, I could see this. Maybe the kids that are older could write reports in the research mode to keep them from going to other, you know, potentially, you know, who knows what kind of links are there. Are younger kids, you know, I would be curious to hear from Angel Q, like, are younger kids actually using the app frequently for the purpose of just learning more about the world? Like, I don't know if I were to just conjecture, and that's all this is, it's just me kind of wondering, is it more kind of a guide rails for parents to allow their kids to just stream, you know, some from Netflix, Disney, but I don't know, but I just cannot see a kid on a continual basis just using this to just keep asking questions about frogs. You know what I mean? I don't get that at that age, especially. So I think that push towards like more isolated screen time just really isn't the answer for kids.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So now I do have to say, if you are a parent listening and you're just thinking, man, Brave Parenting just doesn't like anything that they put out there that are these kids safe options. And I just want you to know, I understand that these are better options than the garbage that's already offered there online. But we take very seriously our job and our calling to biblically examine online media and technology and to present the information to you grounded in truth and how God created us to live and the purposes that he's given us. And this is not a truth that's grounded in convenience. It's not a truth grounded in what feels good or emotions, right? And so we are just going to constantly give you the truth, even if that means that we are not recommending the things that you really want to give your child. So, you know, again, it's the motivation of the heart. I just really pray that just examine your own heart and why you would want your child to have that isolated screen time. Again, if you're using it with them all the time, absolutely. I think that would be fine. So again, I would encourage you to come back next week as I lay out exactly how we theologically, not only evaluated this app and the True Play Christian games, how we evaluated that, and so that you can really, alongside of us, evaluate every app, every game, and every platform so that you can also discern whether or not it is good, right, and true for your family as Christians to engage with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to listening to that episode. I really learned a lot. I learned a lot from the one you just put out about eventually Barbie GPT, you know, OpenAI, you know, kind of pairing up with Mattel. So anyway, thanks so much again for having me on the show, Kelly. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much, Nathan. I appreciate not only just your time researching it, but you even did something you don't do normally for apps, is you gave this app permission to your microphone. And that's a big deal for tech security experts. And so thank you for taking one for the team and really for the benefit of all of our listeners. Now, I urge all of our listeners to share this podcast with your friends, especially friends who tend to jump in and allow a lot of screen time and every kind of new app and, you know, jump on that bandwagon, because kids and chatbots, kids and isolated screen time is a really huge issue that we really need to get more parents on board and start understanding how big of an issue it really is. All right. So share this with your friends. Now, that's all the time we have for you today. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, I'll be back next week with our deep dive into how God's word defines our human purposes and how those purposes are altered by online media and AI technology. You don't want to miss it. So until then, go and be brave.